Hello, everyone. I'm Kyle.
And I'm Glory.
And we are the empty.
Welcome to episode 3. If you're here, you probably also have an empty hole in your heart that weekly episodes of Supernatural took up for the last 15 years.
This week, we're going to be covering episode 4. We know a lot of you have been starting a new semester at school, but we hope you had time to sneak in at least one episode in between moving back to college and starting classes.
As usual, there will be spoilers. If you haven't seen episode 4 yet, consider this your warning. Also, go watch it right now. It's a pretty good episode.
It was a very good episode. We hope you're not as scared of flying as Dean, because we're about to take off in episode 4, Phantom Traveler.
A Phantom Traveler attacks Sam and Dean on an airplane. On transnational flight 2485, a man possessed by the spirit of the Phantom Traveler causes the plane to crash, leaving only 5 survivors left alive. Sam and Dean must exorcise the angry spirit before it attacks the survivors. The brothers realize the only way to do that is take the battle to the skies.
And I would never do that. As much as Dean is afraid of flying, I am right there with him.
Have you ever been on a plane?
I have a few times, and I really don't like it. My ears take forever to pop, and they don't pop after I land for a day or two. It's miserable.
So it's more of a mild annoyance than a terror.
Yeah, and then there's also the feeling, I've seen Final Destination 1. That does not help.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. The only thing I've taken from the Final Destination movies is the log truck ones because, you know, driving behind all of those in the rural area, especially in the UP, no, not a fan. Don't want a log coming through my vehicle. Goodbye.
I had that fear before I even watched that Final Destination because my mom had seen it and then she instilled that into me. But we are a Supernatural podcast.
Yes, so. not a inane fear podcast, though sometimes it may seem like it.
So this episode, we start off with our first sight of a demon, which is really cool. And what I think is really interesting about this demon is that his way of possession, or not necessarily his, but like its way of possession is through the eyes, which we don't see anywhere else in the show that I can remember.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. It's one of those things where I wonder if it's an intentional choice or it was due to the SFX budget at the time, or if it's just the show like kind of testing out the waters before it establishes its lore. Like, as veterans to the show know, demons become a huge part of it later on. I don't consider that too much of a spoiler, but It's really funny watching these episodes back and seeing how they play around with kind of different stuff.
Yeah, because, like, with other episodes, like, we see the ghost, like, ghost lore especially changes so drastically throughout the series. So, like, it's expected that demon lore changes, which it does.
Yeah, it's weird because, like, later on in the show, ghost lore becomes almost procedural. It's like, it's a ghost. Salt and burn the bones. Okay, bye. And in this first season, it's really just like, the ghost needs to do the more traditional thing of, like, finishing its unfinished business or going to a place that it needed to in life or something like that. And the same thing kind of happens with demons. We have this weird stuff that happens, and then later on the show, they're like, actually, this is how it works. We're going with this one.
Yeah. But it is very nice to see where they come from and then where they go and seeing that progress. But let's dive into, like, that first opening scene where we get our kind of basis for this episode. So the guy that gets possessed by the demons with the eyes, he is already terrified of flying, so, like, he is not... Is weak-willed a bad word to say for him?
No, I think that's true, and they talk about it later in this episode, actually, that people that are stressed, scared, angry, otherwise open to bad feelings, they are more likely to be able to be possessed. So I think weak-willed is definitely a good way of saying that.
All right, then the man was weak-willed.
he was a baby.
So he got... Yes. So he got possessed, and then all of a sudden was 100% better. Shocker. And then got into the plane. And then the really interesting thing is that they got into the air. He asked his neighbor, "Hey, how long have you been up here?" And they responded with 40 minutes. And he said, "Time really does fly." And, like, that is a consistent thing he will say throughout the episode. And then he gets up, walks over to a plane door, the emergency door, when they're already thousands of feet into the air, and just opens it.
Just casually opens the emergency exit on the plane, you know, of a pressurized cabin, of which it's very impossible to do. Though, I will say, the last time I flew, I was seated in an exit row right next to the seat, and or right next to the door, rather, and I did have those intrusive thoughts that were like, pull on the handle, open it, open it. And I'm like, no, this is just me being susceptible to my... very neurotic brain.
You gotta love Call of the Void.
Every time I'm in the car by myself, I'm like, I could just screw off the road right now. I could do it. I could do it right now. And yeah, but luckily I did not do what this guy did, and I did not open the door in the middle of my flight.
To be fair, you probably wouldn't have been able to. There is thousands of pounds of pressure on that door. Which leads to a plot hole later in the episode, which I will get into.
Yeah, we know demons are freaky, but, like, alright.
But then after that fun stuff, we cut to Dean lying face down on his bed. And if anybody knows what the Ackles-Ass equation is, this is the image where that comes from.
Yeah,
and it makes me very happy.
Gotta calculate the slope of dead ass.
I remember when I was looking through Glory's notes, she wrote that Dean has America's ass.
Yeah, Dean has the real America's ass. I write my notes as I'm watching them, so whatever pops in my head at the moment that'll get me to remember it is what happens, and that is what I spat out onto the paper.
I do the same thing. I have about 3.5-4 pages on just this episode. I write down everything.
Anyways, as usual, we are distracted by Dean's ass. This is nothing new, and you will become familiar with our distractions by the end of this season.
Just wait for episode 6, where we have the first episode where Jensen is shirtless. So after we see that very nice imagery. Sam walks in. I almost called him Jared, but Sam walks in and he says morning sunshine, and then the two brothers have a conversation about Sam not really sleeping well, and then Sam admits that he's still having the nightmares about Jess, along with some other stuff too. I don't remember what the other stuff is.
Yeah, it's just like really just all the stress dreams possible, just like letting people get killed, all that kind of stuff. I think the real thing is that we get of this conversation with Sam and Dean is that Dean is like, you can't bring it home like that. Like, you can't bring hunting home like that. You can't bring the nightmares home like that. You have to just compartmentalize, which, as we know, is not really a great coping mechanism. I literally wrote in my notes, LOL Dean, you literally have so many problems, shut the fuck up. So he's like trying to be like, you just gotta compartmentalize, Sam. You can't bring it home like that. You can't bring the fear and the regret and everything like that. And then immediately afterwards, Sam pulls Dean's weapon out from under his pillow, and Dean's like, that's not fear, that is precaution.
I just about lost it at that point.
Oh, so good. And as somebody that sleeps with a minimum of 3 weapons by my bed at all times, wait, I understand. I have an axe, I have a taser, and I have a knife. I also have a shotgun in my closet.
Damn, I got nothing. So if somebody breaks in here, I am dead.
Well, it was nice knowing you.
Was it? What
on the record or off the record?
Up to us.
I'm just kidding. I love you.
I love you too. All right. So then after we have that lovely little Sam pulling out the knife and Dean getting defensive, Dean gets a call from a guy named Jerry, someone who, what's his name? John. I try not to remember his name because I don't like him, but I need to remember his name for this. It's a struggle.
Daddy but... Winchester.
Please, no.
Yes.
But, so...
Anyways, yes. They get a call from this guy named Jerry, who Dean knows because he and his dad had helped him out with a poltergeist sometime while Sam was in college. It's unclear, like, how long ago, but... Some time ago. And he's asking for help because he knows that something fucked up happened with the flight, but he doesn't know quite what, but he thinks it's up their alley.
So, the boys drive over right away, and then they start talking to Jerry and stuff. And while they're talking to him, when Jerry mentioned the poltergeist, somebody yelled in the back, "I love the poltergeist!" But yeah, I thought that was funny.
Yeah, it's a solid Easter egg. It's a good movie. I really love, like, by the way, I love throughout, like, the evolution of Supernatural, how they kind of, like, reference pop culture, like, tiptoeing around, like, their existence in the universe. It's just very interesting to me.
And then we have that, I can't remember what, but it's, like, the French one.
The French like mistake.
Season, yeah, in season 5, and that's just so meta.
Also, Paris Hilton. Why is yes. she there? Stay tuned to find out. But yeah, so Jerry, it works for the airline, and he is like, yeah, these people are saying that it was mechanical failure, but I call bullshit on this, and, yeah, so that's why he called them in. He's like, absolutely the fuck not.
Something that I want to jump back to a little bit was that when they were talking to Jerry, and, like, Jerry said that John actually talked about Sam a lot and that he was, and I quote, proud of him. Well, proud was in quotes. You can't actually see me air quote it. But the fact that John was actually, like, talking highly of Sam is kind of impressive.
Yeah.
I will give him credit for that.
Yeah, I do find that really interesting because Sam, like, almost doesn't believe it that, like, Dad was proud because they, as we come to find out, like, had this huge knockdown drag-out fight, like, when Sam wanted to go to college, and it was a huge point of contention with Sam kind of leaving the hunter lifestyle and going off to do his own thing, and, you know, Sam really hasn't talked to him since, so it's a big deal for him. As much as he, like, doesn't believe it, I think he really wants to believe it.
Yeah, and it's, I think, just probably a really nice moment for him, albeit confusing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and then John, or not John, Jerry asks where John is, and the boys are just like, he's busy, he's doing a job.
He's we totally know where our dad is. It's fine. Yeah. It's fine. After that, they gotta investigate more, and we get their next disguise, which is Homeland Security.
Ooh, and Jensen is in a suit.
Yes.
Happy noises.
And he is not happy about being in a suit.
But he does look good in it.
He does look good in it. I am begging you to look up a picture. We'll post one on our Twitter. We'll any excuse to Google it. It's fine.
Oh, yeah.
But, and yeah. That's he totally resents this. He says that he looks like one of the Blues Brothers, and, you know, the brothers are razzing each other about it, but they get the suits, and they go on to check out this warehouse where they're housing all of the plane wreckage, disguised as Homeland Security. They also get the
fake IDs.
Yes.
Dean is very proud of it. And they also were listening back to the audio that Jerry had showed them previously from the cockpit, and in it, so, like, originally, like, really, really messed up and just, like, you couldn't really hear anything, but it had, like, a really creepy noise in it. But I think it was Sam that had edited it out and got the word no survivors.
Yeah, so they've figured out that this EVP says no survivors.
So creepy.
And they're like, That seems like fake news, because actually a few people did live. And we'll get back to that. We'll get back to that.
Yeah, we will come back to that. But yeah, so then they go into the Homeland Security area. They get by the first security guys just fine. Start looking through wreckage using Dean's little Walkman EMP. Is it EMP?
What the fuck is it called? Why can I not think of this? EMF. EMF reader.
EMF. Thank you.
Yes. God. I'm like such a paranormal buff, and I was just like, brain malfunctioning, loading.
We'll blame it on the fact that it's like 9 o'clock right now at night.
It's fine. But yeah, this is actually like one of my favorite parts of this episode, and Sam is like, what the fuck, that looks like a busted up Walkman, and Dean is like, that's because I made this EMF detector out of my old one, and Sam's like, this looks like absolute shit, garbage, and Dean's just so proud of himself, and it's just, I don't know, it's such a cute moment, because he's just like, all proud of himself.
I wrote in all caps that he is so proud of himself, and that I love it, because it just, him happy makes me happy.
I know, and the happiness is so rare for our boys.
Oh no.
You gotta savor it. But as they're walking around, they find this black gunk on the emergency door handle, which, as we know, was the last thing that this demon touched. Which, this is kind of going back into their changing lore. It's black. And you're like, cool, black, creepy demon, yeah, it checks out, but like later we find out that the substance is actually sulfur, and anyone that's taken yellow, a basic right? chemistry class, yeah, exactly, it's yellow. So if you've seen it, it's like a yellow powdery substance, and later in the show, as seasons go on, they actually do show it as being just like the sulfur that everyone knows and loves, like a yellow chalkier kind of substance, but it's black. So it's interesting little thing if you're paying attention.
The fact that I questioned myself when I said that, and I'm a chemistry major.
You go to a STEM school.
But I'll, like, another thing that makes me happy about Dean is that, like, his Walkman EMF detector is what, like, made them notice the sulfur on there.
Yeah.
Which I thought was so cool.
He got his win. He got his little win.
But then after they collected did they collect a sample of it? I think they did.
Yeah, they did. Because they brought it to a guy that tested it.
Yeah, that was Jerry. But yeah, so as soon as they got their sample, we cut back to the security guards again. The real Homeland Security shows up. And then alarms go off.
And they're like, and the boys go running.
But yeah, then Dean being smart little guy, he's taller than me, being smart, he takes his jacket off and like, as they're running, like, throws it on top of the barbed wire, and I'm making hand gesture that nobody but me can see. And he throws it on top of the barbed wire, so and they clamber over it.
Yeah, so they don't scratch themselves or get caught when they're hopping the fence and running through this, like, warehouse yard.
But yeah, so after they make their great escape, 10 out of 10. Oh yeah, I wrote that. Dean is still 10 out of 10. it cuts to the pilot from the accident that survived.
His name is Chuck.
Ah, that name I no longer like. But it cuts back to that pilot, and he's kind of nervous about it. But then, you know, we see that little demon-y, sparkly... Not sparkly, not glittery. Particle.
Smoky.
Thank you. Go into him, and he gets possessed, and it's all super confident again.
Yeah, so he's like, scared. His buddy's, like, trying to tell him, like, you gotta get back on the horse, you know? Just, like, brush it off. It's fine. You're just going in, like, a small plane. You know, you gotta get back in the air, you know? It's your job. It's your career. It's your livelihood, you know? You gotta just get back up there and do it, man. And so he goes up in a plane, and, well, let's just say history repeats itself.
Yeah, same thing. Asked about at 40 minutes, says the same one-liner, and then they dive bomb into a field.
Yeah, so like
Was it a field or were the power lines? Am I thinking of a different show?
I don't remember. They just crash and die. That's all. That's all.
That's fair. But yeah, so then that's when we find out, then it cuts back to like the boys and Jerry and them looking at that little sulfur stuff, and that's when we find out that it is sulfur, and that's when they find out that it's demonic possession, and that Dean has actually never heard of that. Okay, I don't know if it's that he's ever heard of anybody being possessed before, or if he's ever heard of anybody being possessed and dying like this.
Yeah, it's not really clear, because it's weird, like, there doesn't seem to be anything in, like, John's book about this kind of stuff. Like, I think that's pretty well established, but it's unclear, like, what he knows. He certainly doesn't know of a demon that, like, suicide bombs people. Like, I don't know.
So, like, they had that little conversation. Then that's actually when it then cuts back to, like, the pilot and them, but, like, not important. You already covered it.
Yeah.
But then Sam is then doing research on demons, and that he found out that pretty much every religion... Words are hard. That every religion has demons of some sort, and like he was looking at like Japanese lore, and that they have demons that cause disasters, both natural and man-made. So like that's kind of when they look at this. But again, another plot hole that I'm going to cover later.
Yeah, it's one of those lore things, you know, that is just kind of inconsistent with actual legends, but. In as far as the show is concerned, like, they figure out, you know, the plane, both this small plane that the pilot was on and the first plane that the door got opened up in that opening scene, they both went down after 40 minutes exactly, and I don't know how true this is, and I didn't look this up, but the boys say that biblical numerology points towards 40, the number 40 being associated with death.
I also didn't look it up. I did write that down, and like how in like Noah's Ark it rained for like 40 days.
Yeah.
So which, maybe that's just them assuming.
It seems like kind of a reach to me, but anyway.
Everything is supernatural.
Well, yeah. Some are better than others. but then they end up finding out that like historically, like, several other planes have gone down after exactly 40 minutes, and then they're like, okay, so maybe this thing is doing this all over.
And something that I also caught was that Dean wished his dad was there to help them, because they've never encountered a demon before. So, like, we don't want John there. You really shouldn't want John there, Dean. But, like, you do you.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's, I don't know, it's interesting because, like, later we see the boys just becoming, like, super confident and, like, stuff almost becomes routine to them because, like, they just are fully back into hunting. And I think, honestly, it takes Dean being away from John to, like, realize that he himself is competent and can handle these things without second-guessing himself, because he's always taking orders from Dad. Like, that's his whole thing, is, like, always doing what Dad says, and so he has to take the initiative and figure things out himself.
Yeah, like, you guys couldn't see it, but, like, I was nodding along the entire time. and that was actually, like, during that, because I think they're back at their motel room and stuff, but, like, they got a call from Jerry that another plane, the pilot plane from earlier, actually went down in Nazareth, which I looked up because Dean made a comment about it saying, huh,
it's in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, but Dean had made a comment about being like, that's ironic, because apparently Nazareth is also a city in Israel, which is where Jesus spent his childhood and youth, which I guess, because like demons and Jesus, I'm not religious.
Yeah, so it's one of those things where it's definitely, like, they definitely did that on purpose, but I think that's probably the whole reason why they decided to set this chapter of the story in Pennsylvania. So, like, the original plan was based out of Pennsylvania, because Pennsylvania has cities, like, pretty close to each other that are, like, Nazareth and Bethlehem. I've been to both of them.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so there's a lot of, like, religious town names in a small area there, so I'm betting that they kind of use that as a plot device, but it's still a cool find.
Yeah. But then after they find out, like, so that's, they go there, I think they get another sample, and they come back, get it to Jerry, talk about all that stuff, and that's when they realize that the demon is going after all the survivors. So then they start trying to track them all down. They find out two survivors don't plan on flying anytime soon, I don't blame them. I wouldn't be either. And, like, this is actually over a couple months. Excuse me. This is over, like, a couple of months. I don't remember where I saw, where I had caught that, but I do remember that happening. But they do find out that the flight attendant that was on that plane is planning on flying out of Minneapolis. And how is that a 5-hour drive from Pennsylvania?
I don't know. I didn't catch that. I didn't catch where they were going to. But yeah. It's definitely it was
Minneapolis.
Further than they could drive. But I think that you omitted one of the funniest things of the episode, Kyle, of how they found out that other people aren't flying.
I think I probably ended up taking this and like 30-second nap.
Oh my god. Okay, so they're in the car. They're in the car, okay? And Sam is using his fake customer service voice, his nice fakey voice, and is doing a fake customer service survey about airlines to these people that were in this traumatic plane crash. And he's just like, thank you for blah blah blah. We'll take care of you next time you decide to fly. Like, it's just the most smarmy bullshit thing, and I just thought it was so funny because, oh man, the voices that Sam does, especially early on, when he's like trying to establish himself as like good cop kind of thing, is just like, it's palpable. You can feel it.
Oh, how the turntable later on. But yeah, so I, now that you mentioned that, I do fully remember it. But then Sam also tried leaving messages on, what was her name again, Amanda? Yeah, he tried leaving messages on Amanda's phone, but like she didn't answer, not too surprising, it's a random phone number. But then they make it to the airport and just in time, and Dean actually called Amanda on the airport phone.
Yeah, and they call the gate that they're at, which, by the way, of course it's fucking gate 13! Of course it is.
I did not catch that.
Yes, it's 13. Unlucky 13. Even though 13 is my favorite number in the whole world, it's the spooky number.
But yeah, so Dean picks the bad route of going about this and pretends to be like a doctor calling to tell her that her sister got into a car accident. But Amanda's too smart for him, and she's like, I just got off the phone with her. She's studying. And she's like, is this one of Vince's friends?
Which we assume is a deadbeat ex.
Oh yeah, 100%. And Dean just like, yeah I am. And that he just misses you so much that like you need to call him back like right now. You need to go.
Don't get
him
on the plane.
Right now. Like he will be devastated if you don't. But then she said that she'll call him when she lands.
Yeah, she's just like, yeah, just tell him to call when I land. And yeah, it definitely did not work. And since this is post 9/11 filming here in 2005, we can't just run up to the gate and stop her. We have to buy a plane ticket.
And Dean is so against it. He's like, this is why I drive everywhere. He does not like flying. He is terrified of it.
And Sam did not know this until now. So we get this like lovely moment of Sam just like poking at him and being like, are you serious, dude? Like, really?
I'm sorry, I looked at my notes and saw an asterisk baby, and I was really confused and trying to figure out why I did that, but I found out why.
He says, why do you think I drive everywhere, Sam? And then I wrote in my notes, LOL, you mean it's not because you have an unhealthy obsession with your car?
I mean, it's such a nice car, though, like, I would...
Yeah, so, like, I understand the impulse to want to drive everywhere instead of fly, because I feel like it's a Midwest thing, because people out here, I'm on the East Coast now in Connecticut, and people out here will not drive somewhere more than like 3 or 4 hours. They think that's a huge long drive, but I've personally driven 12 hours to go to a concert in the Midwest and not even thought about flying, so I understand that, but he's got some more issues going on than just stubbornness.
Oh, absolutely. And that's when Sam was just like, fine, I'll do it myself. And Dean's like, wait, you're not doing it by yourself. I can't let you do that. And
I can't leave you alone, Sammy. What if you get hurt?
Then Dad will never forgive him. But Dean caves and helps, and that's why I wrote in asterisk baby. Because it's like... So then it cuts to them on the plane, and Dean is terrified.
His eyes are bugging. His face, like, I just really enjoyed watching this again because, like, he, his face looks so hilarious when they're, like, on takeoff. Oh my god.
And you can just see Sam laughing on the inside while Dean is humming Metallica to calm himself down.
He's self-soothing by humming Metallica. And Sam is like hardcore judging him. And he's like, it calms me down. It's like, all right, buddy, whatever you gotta do. And this is where we actually have the discussion that we mentioned earlier that demons target people with a chink in the armor, as Sam says. So, like, he's worried that because Dean is, like, getting so anxious and, like, freaking out and losing his mind about flying that he's going to get possessed because the demon will see him as a weak target.
And Dean's like, I don't remember what he said, but he's like, I don't even know what he said at all. I have zero recollection.
It's just this brother moment, like, that they're picking at each other, and Dean's, like, usually tries to act tough, but he absolutely can't. Oh, wait. Okay, so this, I found the quote, this might be what you're talking about. He said, stow the touchy-feely self-help yoga crap.
Oh, that is the quote? I wrote it down, too. Where did I put it? Oh, that's later on. Yeah, that is after Dean is scared by the turbulence.
Yeah.
Like, I remembered I wrote it down, but I couldn't find it. But
but yeah, they're throughout this entire episode, they're just having these, like, little brother moments where, like, Sam is like, really? Really? And he's like, shut the fuck up.
But Sam thinks that it might be Amanda, so Dean's like, all right, I'll go talk to her. And Sam, I think, says, do you bring anything, like, test her? And Dean's like, I got holy water.
And
Sam's like...
And I would like to say, how the fuck did he get a bottle of holy water on the plane that is not in a 3.3-ounce bottle? Sir, what?
It was in a flask, right?
Yeah. It's like, how did you get this through security?
Magic. TV magic.
Anyways, as you were saying, Dean goes to kind of suss out Amanda.
And Sam was like, I think we can go more subtle. And he's like, if she's possessed, she'll flinch at the name of God in Latin. And Dean's like, I know. And he, like, gets up, and Sam's like, it's Christo. And Dean's like, I know, I'm not an idiot. And Sam's like, fine, go do it. And then Dean's walking back during the turbulence. I don't remember if he's already back there or if it happens. I was walking by the turbulence shakes, and, like, he hits the chair next to him, and it's just adorable.
While he's talking to Amanda, she's like, well, everybody's scared of something. It's like, okay. Very on the nose. But yeah, Dean goes back to the seat because it's not her. He says it. She's just like, what? Did you say something? Like, you're an idiot. Like, what the fuck?
And, like, Amanda's just, like, chill as a cucumber. Cool as a cucumber.
Yeah, she's frighteningly well-adjusted for somebody who is in a plane, who has just been in a violent plane crash.
There are 5 survivors, then one's already dead.
Yeah, for real. And then they see that, it's the co-pilot, as he's, like, going back up into the cockpit and shutting the door, which locks.
Yeah, and, like, his eyes flash black, which is how they see it.
Yeah, and so they're like, oh, fuck, we only have a few minutes left, we need to get him out of the cockpit. And they have no way to get to them because they're in, like, this sealed off cockpit, the door's locked, so they have to convince the co-pilot, or they have to convince Amanda to help them get the co-pilot out.
Yeah, and, like, the way that Dean found out was because, like, he was walking up and down the aisle because they had, like, 15 minutes left using his little Walkman EMF thing, and I think it peaked on him, and then he said Christo, and the pilot just glared at him, and that's, like, when the eyes turned black.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rough times. But then they basically go, listen, Amanda, I know this fucking sounds crazy, but we need your help.
And, like, they explain, like, Chuck just died in a plane crash, and she's like, wait, what? He died? And, like, everything they're doing, like, totally would have gotten them thrown in jail. Like, the U.S. Marshal on the plane would have, like...
Oh, absolutely.
Would have 100% put them in handcuffs. I digress.
Yeah. No, especially in 2005. No, no.
Oh, yeah.
No, like, shit on planes.
No. But then Amanda actually, like, goes up and, like, gets the co-pilot and the boy. They're prepping, talking about, like, the exorcism that they're going to do. Like, two parts. Gotta first get it out of him and then send it back to hell. And, like, when it's outside of the body, it is much stronger because it doesn't need a host at that point.
Yeah, it's like manifesting in a different way, which is very different than the exorcisms that we will come to see as routine later in the show.
Yeah. And, like, as soon as the co-pilot gets back there, Dean just socks him in the face, and Amanda's just like, what?
Like, I thought that you were helping.
I thought you were going to talk to the guy, not knock him out. But they didn't knock him out, but they ended up, like, duct taping his mouth shut, I think, and, like, keep him on the floor. And here's that plot hole I was talking about. Like, Demon was able to open up a plane door that had thousands of pressure behind it, but they couldn't get Sam and Dean off of him. Like, I know they're strong, but they're not that strong.
Yeah, like, even though they're, like, splashing holy water on him and starting to do the exorcism, which, like, it obviously puts them in pain and, like, some level of weakness, like, no, absolutely not.
No. And as they're doing the first part of the exorcism, like, Amanda's panicking, and the demon got the tape off his mouth and said, I know what happened to your girlfriend. She died screaming and burning, and even now she's burning. And Sam just is like, what? And Dean just punches him again.
Yeah, Sam is, like, not okay, because this is the second misadventure in a row where a creature has, or, like, he was staring. Actually, no, this happens in the second episode. Never mind. I got the order fucked up.
That is okay.
But yeah, Sam is absolutely not okay.
Is he ever?
Well, not really, but...
True. But they get the demon out, and, like, as that's happening, he kicks the exorcism book down the aisle, and he comes out and, like, goes into the vent and the plane starts malfunctioning. And Dean is shitting himself at this point. And then Sam is able to go grab the exorcism book and, like, continues it while Dean is still shitting himself.
Yeah, Dean is just having a panic attack.
And as Sam finishes up that exorcism, the plane is struck by lightning and all is better. All is right in the world.
Yay, they saved the plane. The end. Except...
So, like, they get off the plane, everything is fine, like, the co-pilot is being questioned, like, he had been blacked out since before he even got on the plane.
Yeah, and this is something that stays consistent with demons, like, throughout supernatural lore and, like, general lore, is, like, a lot of times people don't either understand, comprehend, or only catch flashes of when they're possessed, so when the demon is actively piloting their body, they don't remember, they have, like, amnesia for the time.
Except there's one person that her host was able to see everything that was happening. Like, she felt everything happen to her. So, like, it's really inconsistent, but also consistent. It's strange.
Yeah, it's like a weird fugue state, because, like, there are sometimes, it's weird because, like, either demons are, like, completely piloting, but they can, like, back off at times and, like, let the person out to play again. It's weird, but yeah, there's usually some sort of weird fugue state going on with the people that are possessed.
But, like, after the pilot said that, like, Amanda mouths thank you to the boys, and as they're leaving, Sam's like, how did the demon know about Jessica? And Dean just like, demons can read mind, and that they lie, like, either, well, that's what Dean had said, so either, it's never been confirmed either way, but, like, either the demon's able to, like, read minds, or maybe he worked with whatever killed her, and then in turn also had killed their mom. We never actually really find out, but that is a theory out there.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, this is not the only instance of somebody bringing it up, and we'll talk about it in, actually, when our discussion of the Bloody Mary episode coming up next, where Sam gets messaging about this. But we'll also find out later, once Supernatural's own demon lore is kind of more advanced, is that, like, there's this whole, like, network of people gossiping in the demon world of who's doing what and what the fuck is going on, so...
like, after all that happened, they go back to Jerry and, like, tell him what happened, and, like, he thanks them, and then Dean's like, hey, how'd you get my phone number? And then he said that John told him to call. They're like, what? And he's like, yeah, his voicemail's like, have your number, call my son Dean Winchester at this number. But then they, like, thank him and leave, and then Dean calls John's phone and is really confused because, like, he had called it before and, like, that never popped up.
Yeah, they've been trying for weeks to get a hold of him, and Dean says that his phone line has been disconnected, which, by the way, that's not really how phones work. Like, unless John Winchester is calling AT&T and being like, hello, please cancel my plan, and then reactivating it, which I don't buy, because I don't think that it's, like, a prepaid burner, at least in this stage, but... Yeah, the phone line had been disconnected previously, so Dean's like, what the hell? He did not set up his voicemail that says this, like, he's gotta be wrong, but then they call it, and John is saying, call Dean if you're in trouble.
And, like, after I finished watching that episode, I did call the phone number, because I know it used to work, but it no longer works, and I was actually really sad about it.
It's a bummer, but I guess after, like, 16 years... They don't want to pay for that service anymore.
The CW can afford it. They have plenty of money.
Bitches.
Yes, they are. No, actually, the CW, you're very lovely. Please don't end our podcast. But yeah, after that, the boys drive off, and that's the end of episode 4. So that was the end of episode 4, but now we're going to dive into a little bit of the demon lore. And it was actually really difficult for me to find actual lore, because, like, when I looked it up, I just found, like, I looked up, like, Christian demon lore and just came up with not what I was looking for. So, like, I don't have a whole lot, which I'm really sad about. But, like, I also looked into, like, some other stuff, but gonna dive into it. So, in going through the lore, Sam originally called the demon they were going after a, quote-unquote, disaster demon from Japanese lore. When looking into that type of lore, what pulls up is a form of spirit called the yokai. Now, the yokai is not the typical demon that would appear in Western lore, but is more of a spirit or entity. The yokai are spirits typically associated with causing natural disasters, diseases, and accidents, such as, in our case, the plane crashes. According to a series called the Gazu Hiyaki Yagyo, which translates to Illustrated Night Parade of 100 Spirits, there are more than 200 different types of yokai depicted in the three texts, all of which have their own history too, which is really cool. Even though this is the spirit that most closely relates to the occurrences happening in this episode, the boys do not use methods from Japanese lore to deal with it. The boys actually treat the spirit as a typical demon from Western culture, taking from Christian religion. And according to the New Testament, demons are causes of pain and suffering, which, check and check, he causes pain and suffering in this episode, but they do not tempt humans as that is done by the devil or Lucifer himself. Demons also have the ability to possess humans to do their bidding, which happened in this episode. In order for a person to be rid of a demon from inside of themselves, they have to undergo an exorcism. And the word exorcism comes from the Greek word exorcising, which means to bind by oath, which is really interesting considering exorcism is to banish something and get rid of an unwanted spirit or demon, but the word means to bind it. I don't know, I thought that was cool.
I think that's an interesting thing. I wonder if they take it to mean... they are binding them back to hell or something like that.
Oh, that is a good take on that.
Yeah, it's kind of a stretch, but I think that could be that because, like, the oath could just be, like, the ritual text, basically.
I don't think that's a stretch at all. I think that actually makes a lot of sense, especially in terms of it.
That's cool. I never knew that's what that meant.
Yeah. But, so there are actually multiple ways that one can perform an exorcism, although I would not recommend doing one yourself. Get a priest, please.
Call a priest!
I think the priest actually have to get, like, special permission from the church, like, the Pope himself.
Yeah, they have to actually contact the Vatican. It's crazy.
It's really cool, though. but these messes would involve prayers or rituals, asking the spirit what it wants and obtaining the said thing for the spirit. Other means involve moving the spirit into a stone or animal and then destroying such thing, and in turn destroying the spirit or demon. Other forms of exorcism also involve making the host body uncomfortable to the point the spirit no longer wants to remain in the body. And this can be done by, unfortunately, beating the host, burning them, submerging them in water, Whether that is holy water or regular water, I'm not sure. It did not say, but I'm going to assume it is holy water. When these less than desirable means of exorcism are taken, the host will sometimes die. And in these cases, they're most commonly children or young women, which is really unfortunate. Because this did happen in the past. It probably still happens today, even. But in this episode, we see this slightly, where the boys hold down the co-pilot and spray him with holy water to try and hurt him, so that he can't fight back while they're reciting the prayer. And in future episodes, this is really the only time where we see them fight a demon in this way. As they learn and grow, they find new ways to trap demons and are able to safely exorcise them in this way. To an extent, there are always exceptions, especially in Supernatural. There are certain things that the boys do that do not save the victim, but this is a topic for future episodes, which we kind of mentioned earlier. What's really interesting about the demon in this episode, like I had mentioned earlier, this was supposed to be a yokai, but they quickly disproved this when the demon flinched at the name of God in Latin, which is Christo, and those don't really pair up, Japanese lore and Christianity, I don't think, as well as the demon having very unique abilities that would not necessarily align with the yokai. But something unique to this demon in particular, though, in the show, is that its ability to possess a person through the eyes. That's not seen anywhere else in the show, from what I can remember.
Yeah, no, usually demons go through the mouth, as far as I remember.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, that sounds about right. Because, like, not could be the nose or the ears. That'd be weird. Weirder. But the demon also displayed superhuman strength while possessing a person. And an interesting plot hole, like I had mentioned before, is that the demon was able to open the airplane door mid-flight, but he wasn't able to get the boys off of itself, which, like, show-wise makes sense, lore-wise, not at all. Another power that the demon had was the ability to interfere with the electromagnetic field on the plane, which is about the only power it had that I think had connection to being a yokai. Other powers it displayed were powers such as being invulnerable to a point, having the ability to change the host's voice, and possibly to telepathy as it knew about Jeff dying. But again, that there are other possibilities about maybe working under the thing that killed her, but never confirmed in the show, like I said earlier. And another thing during the show is that the demon reacted to both the holy water and the prayer that was being used, which further goes to confuse the lore of whether this demon was actually a yokai from Japanese lore, or a demon from Christianity. Yeah, that's about the lore that I have on there. I wish I could have found more on the demons. I really don't know a whole lot about them. I'm not religious. I don't go to church. It's not really my thing. I know Glory might have some stuff to say on this.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. Like, it's inconsistent of them to use combinations of lore from multiple cultures. Like, while things do cross cultures, they specifically mention the disaster demons, so I don't understand why they chose to use, like, more traditional Christian ceremonies. I was raised super Catholic. It's really interesting, though, because in the actual Bible, there aren't a whole lot of mentions or, like, legitimacy to the existence of, like, demons and Satan and things like that. So it comes a lot out of things like Dante's Inferno, especially, that I lovingly refer to as kind of Bible fanfic that was written, and kind of like further translations of the Bible and things like that, where we get more into kind of like the demons and hell and that kind of stuff. So it's really interesting to see where the show draws from.
Alright, so now that the lore is out of the way, we are going to dive into our quote of the show, quote of the episode. Still working on the name.
Yeah, if you have any ideas for this segment, let us know, because we're not creative. But we do love quotes. I am more creative
during the day. Yes. Quotes are wonderful. So, you know the drill. We are going to each say a quote. If it lines up, great, we agree. If it doesn't, we're going to duke it out. Fight each other. We'll one day fight in a Walmart parking lot. I'm not gonna promise it, but I can say it.
We'll film it for Patreon one day. Just yes. You wait.
And then after this episode goes out, we are going to put the poll on Twitter and then let you guys vote on your favorite quote. And this is the first time we've recorded since the first two episodes, but like I I did lose the first quote poll, and I was sad. I lost it by just a little bit. And then the second one, not too shocking, was saving people, hunting things, the family business.
Iconic.
Extremely. But without further ado, Glory, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. 3, 2, 1.
Stow the touchy-feely self-help yoga crap.
It's not helping. I totally agree. That was a great quote from the episode.
Just such a precious brother moment, and something I can definitely see myself saying to my brother when I'm smacking him on the back of the head or something in the car. I just love it. And plus, it comes out of such like a rare moment of vulnerability, or at least like real vulnerability that we see from Dean. And it, chef's kiss. Kyle, do you have any honorable mentions?
I don't have any I know you already haven't listed, so I will let you say your honorable mention, and I will agree or disagree.
All right, I got this one. I already mentioned it earlier in the pod, but that's not fear, that is precaution. When Dean is referring to the knife that was under his pillow, which is something I completely relate to at all times. There's a reason I carry a pocket knife, and it's not fear.
I cannot relate to it, but I do like that quote too.
Kyle is too much of a soft boy, but that's okay. We left him anyways. I also really liked when they suited up for their big disguise as Homeland Security. Dean is like, I look like one of the Blues Brothers. Which might be a deep cut for some of you if you're youngins, but Blues Brothers, iconic. Go watch it.
Is this when I tell you that I've never seen it?
Kyle, are you fucking kidding me?
I'm not.
Oh my god. We're gonna have to have a movie night next time I visit. Oh god.
Hey, to be fair, I just saw The Princess Bride for the first time today.
It's taking every ounce of will in my body to not hang up the Discord call right now. I just want you to know. I think then my last honorable mention for this week is when Dean is humming Metallica and Sam is judging him about it. He's like, it calms me down. And I love that. Another great brother moment. If you guys have any other quotes that you really liked from this episode, let us know. Fight for it on Twitter. We will either agree or disagree, and we'll let you know who wins next week.
Yeah, I do really enjoy the quotes. It's always funny. Not funny, but it's always fun to see how it goes throughout the week, because I will always check, like, once a day or something, just to see where they're at.
It's especially fun when we have different favorite quotes, because it's just like Kyle and I texting each other and being like, hee-hee-hee, I'm ahead.
And then I saw that you were getting delayed, and then I stopped texting you.
goodness.
I enjoy this. This is fun.
Also, thanks everyone for all the love on Twitter. It's been great getting to see your guys' responses and everything.
My heart, after the first episode went out, was just so full of happiness. It was wonderful. Thank you again. Seriously. So this has been episode 3 of The Empty.
If you want to stay up to date with our quest to rewatch all 320 episodes of Supernatural, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at TheEmptySPN. You can also shoot us an email at TheEmptySPN@gmail.com. That's TheEmptySPN@gmail.com.
Episode of The Empty will now be released every other Monday starting this week. So check back in on September 20th, where we'll be covering episodes 5 and 6 of season 1.
We hope we can make your Mondays a little less empty. Bye, guys.
Bye, everyone.
3, 2, 1.
2, 1.
Why did you also count?
Hello, everyone. I'm Kyle.
And I'm Glory.
And we are...
3. No, we count it down, Kyle. That's how we do it around here.
I know, I'm so tired.
We hope you can... Wow, motherfucker. Why can I never say this the right way? We hope... We hope we... Why is that so hard for me?